Around the NFL podcast is freaking awesome.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined in a room that's filled with heroes, Connie Fox, Colleen Wolf to others, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, people?
Hey, Dan.
It's been a minute.
It's been.
I know. Great to see you guys again, see your faces.
So great. Mm-hmm. You were back east in Philly doing Philly, eating cheesesteaks and ringing the Liberty Bell, things like that.
Obviously ringing the Liberty Bell. Yeah. Like, had to do that.
Yeah. And Wes, you just got back from Tybee, and we've already – I feel like the Tybee event has been very well covered. We've been tracking it very closely, but now the man of the island is back. So I was curious what your overall takeaways were from the weekend.
It was a fantastic, magical weekend. And Greg did a good job of describing it as you almost feel like you're getting away with something.
Mm.
The people who live on that island have basically said to the rest of society, we're not following your conventions. We're flouting them. And it can be a little obnoxious. There can be a little hedonism. But I think the redeeming value is that each of these characters has become so interesting and the way they live their lives, that it's really a performance art. Mm-hmm. That the purpose of art is to create a pure moment. And I can count, I would need two hands to count the pure moments from the weekend.
The
great sell.
Like the,
we're like the tourism community committee for Tybee Island at this point. I love it.
Well, yeah, what struck me is like the characters that Wes is friends with, and they're all so different. Like, They're all such unique characters, and they could not – it could not be a bigger – it's such a cross-section of people all bringing their own, like, flavor to the party.
By the way, that Huckapoo's hat is amazing.
Oh, yeah. There was a little exchange. I gave some Super Bowl swag to a buddy of mine, and he gave me the Huckapoo's hat.
Nice.
You know, there is – whether it's Austin, Texas, or Portland, Oregon, there is – some communities that pride themselves on being different and unique, and it's like, keep Austin weird, keep Portland weird. Maybe all us talking about Huckapoos on some level puts it in danger. We don't want a bunch of, you know, basic people rolling into Tybee, right? We want to keep it weird.
We don't have to worry about that. The basic people go to Hilton Head.
Right.
Oh.
My sense is the people on Tybee drive out the basic people.
Yes.
They don't make them – they do not feel comfortable.
Yeah. And I don't know if Greg told you about his gambling moment.
No.
Ooh, we should definitely dive in.
He typically hides these things from us.
One of the best moments of the weekend was – and this is hard to explain how this happens, but I am outside and it's dusk. It's dark. We're playing cornhole for hours. And there is a section of the party inside in the drinking garage.
Right.
And – my friend Denise has created this dice game, which she has called Turd Ferguson. And I think she came up with the name on the spot. But
sounds like it.
I didn't even know all this was going on, but because I was playing cornhole. And I look over, and every, like, 5 minutes, the whole garage just erupts. And if it was in cartoon form, it would be like the roof comes off for a mere second. And, like, there's this bright, shining light, and the whole building shakes because it just erupts. And people, like, cheering and laughing and... And it was Greg winning.
Wow.
I got a lot of props for my dice swag. Just the attitude that came in there and then just the domination. I felt like it was crazy how Denise made it feel like I was Frank Sinatra in Vegas in like the 1950s. It was just
you were winning like sandwiches or food or what were you
like
winning?
A tiny amount,
exactly.
Like 5 bucks.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's
tiny amount.
Greg
money.
Winked as he said that, by the
right.
way, just for the listening audience.
It's true. It's
a way Denise has as a performance artist. She was like Freddie Mercury working the crowd at Live Aid. she had the whole place in the palm of her hand for a minute.
I look forward to like the Denise biopic to come out.
Oh yeah,
down the line.
Yeah, it's coming.
All right, so everyone's back together almost. Mark is in the wilderness, and by wilderness I mean the middle of Los Angeles somewhere, wandering around, hopefully
Ooh.
Enjoying.
Is
himself.
He posting on Instagram?
Is he? I have.
I don't
not
know.
Been
we gotta check. I'll check.
I have not been tracking, but we got a nice show coming up today. A lot of news to get to, including a very. Controversial new league rule that was agreed to by the owners and is leading to a lot of talk.
Streets are talking.
Both sides of the aisle. Also, the dreaded ACL monster strikes again, hurting one of the front runners, I would say, for the team of ATL. A lot of news to get to. Oh, my goodness. There's almost a Browns trade, Christian Hackenberg update, Richie Incognito update. So much to get to. So we're going to do a lot of news today and really dig in on what's going on in the league during what phase are we in, Greg, of OTAs?
Three.
Phase three. How many?
I think four.
Phase four. I like phase four the best.
Yeah?
Really?
Why?
Just sounds really important.
Would also mean
phase
final
four.
Phase.
That we're about to get our total dead period in a couple weeks. We're almost there.
Yeah, let's enjoy it, having stuff to talk about now. And then to close the show, keep it kind of open-ended right now, but all you need to know is 44 seconds of freedom.
Yep, that's it.
And the show. All right.
I love it.
But, so much to get to, so let's do it. Starting with the news, Loose Cannon back behind the glass for another day. How'd it go with Shaq?
It was pretty cool. He's a cool guy. He's a big guy.
Yeah? Well, we knew that.
Yeah.
You didn't have to report that.
No, he's really big. Chin. And he's very
intimidating. Good thing they sent you there to find that out.
Well, he comes off the elevator, and he's like, what are we doing? When are we doing it? What are we doing right now? And I'm like, hi.
It's pretty good Shaq
and
voice.
And I shook two of his fingers, and I was like, so we're just going to
go, just tell me what I got to say.
For those, I don't remember if we talked about it on the show, but Erica shot something with Lakers and Heat and Mavericks and
Celtics.
Magic.
Celtics.
Magic.
Boston.
And, of course, Magic, great. Shaquille O'Neal. It sounds like it went good.
People should check it out. Broadcast.
Yeah.
I got the broadcast. It's up.
It was a good time.
Let's do some news.
What's your name again?
Ian Rappaport.
Do you color that hair, or is that a real haircut?
It's real.
Yes!
What is that?
That's so gold.
That was
gold.
Panthers owner David Tepper in his introductory press conference. So many things I loved about that. One, he didn't know who Ian was, which is great. And then, he's putting a theory out there. That's not the first time I heard that theory. There was a certain ATN media insider who's, I believe, posed that question.
I've floated it toward Ian before, and he has always denied it. And, it's funny, Greg, when you sent a instant message chat about that quote yesterday, I thought that Ian asked Tepper if he had colored his hair. And I was like, oh, that's a little out of
weird
rap sheets.
Yeah.
This wasn't a one-on-one either. This is in front of the entire, room full of reporters on NFL Network.
I'm not saying like NFL Network, although it's a very entertaining and informative channel. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that like you have to be watching it if you're a football fan or executive, but do you want your owner to be aware of Ian Rappaport, who's on NFL Network as the main news insider? I mean, do you want your owner? Does it matter at all that he has no idea what's going on NFL Network?
No.
I don't think so. He's rich.
Okay.
He owns a team now.
If anything, that's good. It's like he said he's going to, he'll let the football people take care of that.
All right.
Watch
there you
it.
Go. It's been settled. Good job, guys. Way to keep your jobs for
another day. The elves will build the shoes while he sleeps.
Let's start, with the news that came down on Wednesday. The NFL will enact a national anthem policy for 2018 that requires players and league personnel on the sideline to stand, but gives them the option to remain in the locker room if they don't want to stand, Roger Goodell announced on Wednesday. Under the change approved by team owners at the spring league meeting, individual clubs will have the power to set their own policies to ensure the anthem is being respected during any on-field action. If a player chooses to protest on the sideline, the NFL will fine the team. The player could also be fined by the team, Rap Sheet and Judy Batista reported. This was all unanimously approved by the owners. It was kind of presented, at least from the league side, as a compromise. But the union immediately piped up and said, we weren't consulted on this. We're not happy about this. And, of course, this is a big story. And now it's getting bigger again, Greg.
It is. And the most surprise, there's a lot to get into. But I'll start with the owners really focusing on the phrase getting the focus back on football in 2018. And Roger Goodell, the commissioner, talked about that a lot. And actually, we do have a clip of Goodell talking. Let's listen to that.
Nice setup.
From our standpoint, this is a great opportunity to continue that partnership with our players and keep the focus on the progress and the programs that we think are so important in the communities. We're proud of that support, and we think that that's how change is really going to be made.
And I came away thinking there, I just think this policy has such a strong chance to put the focus not on football. So if the expressed intent of the policy, literally that's what they said, is one of, if not the prime intent of the policy, is to get the focus back on football and away from politics, I think, as we've seen today, but I also think it's going to continue in the next few months and into the season, that it's going to go against what their intent is.
Yeah, and it's obviously such a complicated situation. And no matter how you feel, I think a lot of times people start to dig their heels in even harder when this kind of thing comes up, especially when you're calling it an anthem protest. And originally, like, as we know, it wasn't an anthem protest. It was actually a sign of respect to kneel or to link arms. And there needs to be a way for people to kind of voice their opinion when they see injustices. And you can't really silence people, but the dialogue that players and the community and the teams have is the most important thing, because that's the only thing that's going to lead to change. And I don't know how much this new thing helps that.
It falls on somebody to watch the money. That's the owners. They got to protect the brand, and I get that. That's why they acted the way they did. They reacted to the president of the United States. They reacted to all the controversy to protect their brand, but to protect their brand and the money that trickles down to everyone. But I agree with both of you guys. To me, the focus is not going to be on football. It's going to be reporters handpicking or counting which players were in the locker room, which players were not out there. So they're going to be identified. They're going to be castigated. They're going to be held up to scrutiny. And it's not going to be about football.
By the end of last season, there was only a few players kneeling. And relatively, it was not like a huge part of the conversation. And that's kind of what, you know, it's almost like it's not just a PR problem. But if you're being real, that's part of the equation here that the NFL is trying to solve, is public relations. And I think it could go against public relations and have more focus on it when this is happening. You know what? I don't know.
I think what jumped out to me and why I had questions about it was the idea that the Players Association was not formally a part of it, and Roger Goodell said that the league had spoken to tens, if not hundreds, of players getting their input. But to me, in my opinion, to do it right, you needed to involve the NFLPA. And if you want to call it a compromise, it has to be a true compromise, where the NFLPA puts out a statement too saying, we are behind what this is. And if they can't come to an agreement, then you probably can't put in a new policy, because all it's going to do is create a situation like we have right now. So I agree with you guys that I think what's going to happen now is players are that maybe were on the fence could end up going the other way as well. Or there could be a mass decision made by players to show that they didn't like being passed over, and you could have more issues on the field. I mean, it is maybe a Pandora's box situation.
Right. Exactly. That the way they had it now with no policy on some level, you know, makes more sense, because there's so many things that this just opens up. Number one, like last year on the field, Shad Khan, Chris Johnson, many of the owners locked arms with players on the field during the anthem. Art Rooney, the owner of the Steelers, was asked a question whether he thought raising your fist or locking arms would be considered disrespectful. And he wasn't really sure about the answer to that, but he thought so, yes. So I think under this policy, the actions of the owners last year when they did that would be fine-worthy, I guess.
There's an absurdity to this situation that didn't hit home for me until I saw the vice president's tweet with the picture of the players. And if you showed that picture to any group of people outside of this country on Earth, they would tell you that's about as respectful as human beings can act in any situations. If you showed that photo to Americans before 2000, before this century, they would say the same thing. That's about as respectful as a person can act.
And that's it. The shame of it is that the NFL is doing a lot with the Players Coalition, and they're taking all these grants and they're spending millions and millions of dollars as a bridge to the players for this. And to me, all that's kind of going to get overshadowed by this policy. And I saw a quote that really struck with me. I think it was Robert Johnson, who's a very famous former district attorney general, and he was like a lawyer in the Nuremberg trials. He's one of the like most famous lawyers in U.S. history. And the quote was, "To believe that patriotism will not flourish if patriotic ceremonies are voluntary and spontaneous instead of a compulsory routine is to make an unflattering estimate of the appeal of our institutions to free minds." And I thought that was kind of like a perfect mm-hmm. quote that talks a lot about this.
And the thing about this is we're going to be talking about it as soon as week one. I mean, preseason, like you said, we're going to be watching the sidelines. People are going to be talking about it. This isn't going to end here. And it felt like for a minute there it was starting to come to an end at least.
Right. That's
in on the field football news. The Chargers, such a strong team on paper, but they took a hit on Tuesday. Third-year tight end Hunter Henry suffered a torn ACL during practice. Anthony Lynn downplayed the injury initially, didn't believe it was too serious, then learned what the diagnosis was. And this is a Chargers team that had 25 players go to IR 2 seasons ago. They had better injury luck last year, but they had all other issues last year, some of them brought on by themselves by moving the team, kicker issues. But now here's the injury bug again. And Wes, we'll start with you on this one, because Hunter Henry is a name that has come up a lot in this podcast as a guy who has a chance to become a star in this offense, and now you got to hit pause on that whole situation.
Chargers were 0-3 last year before Hunter Henry entered the lineup. They went 9-4 the rest of the way with him in the lineup, emerging as one of the best all-around tight ends in the NFL. I believe Pro Football Focus had him behind only Gronk. He blocks really well. He's a good red zone weapon. He moves the chains. And they won 6 of 7 games down the stretch with Hunter Henry playing a big role. I think it's a crushing blow for the Chargers.
It's such a shame because this was his year. Like, this was his shot without Antonio Gates there for the first time in, like, 70 years. Hunter Henry could sort of
That's accurate,
get in there, right? I know, and be the focal point of the offense. And now they have a huge need at tight end. And so you have to wonder, are they going to call back Antonio Gates and be like, hey, you know, everything that we said before. And it's not like we don't even know how much he has left in the tank because it didn't really look like he had a whole lot left anyway. So maybe they kind of get over it with all of their receivers, but it's an issue now for them for sure.
It's a shame. It's like they don't even let us Chargers supporters get to like August. Like, I talked about it with Will Brinson on his podcast, Pick Six Pod. People should check that out. And like there's like kind of this Chargers contingent. He's one of them. I'm one of them for sure. Wes is in the mix. And it's like they don't even let us get to August with that like imaginary ideal Chargers team in our head. And they always start chopping it down even before
Who's they, the football gods?
The football gods, yeah. Because it's like no matter what happens now with the Chargers, you'll always be I'll be comparing it to this ideal Hunter Henry-led Chargers team in my head that could have happened. Because I thought Hunter Henry, I was expecting him to be one of the top 3 or 4 tight ends in the league.
That said,
we'll stop.
As crushing as this is, if they are actually a good team, they will overcome this.
That's true.
That's fair.
So you can't now tamp down expectations. The Patriots, I know they're the Patriots. They lost Julian Edelman. They figured it out.
No. Henry just happened to be kind of like the guy I was most excited about.
That rising star.
I thought he was going to be kind of their most dominant receiver.
As a Chargers booster, did you consider the notion, which I did not when I wrote this article, it just popped into my head, that Mike Williams, the guy they drafted in the first round, could be like moved into a move tight end role, a receiving tight end.
Yeah.
Would make sense. He's got the size for it, for sure.
And they've got 3 good receivers ahead of him on the depth chart.
Another, by the way, ACL injury was Eagles linebacker Paul Warlow, who also suffered a torn ACL this week. And it is a reminder. It's a sobering reminder, and it sucks that these are some of the best, you know, athletes in the country, and they are in great shape, most of them, by the time they get to this time of year. But and sometimes it's just a ticking time bomb in there, the knee. And especially that ACL, if you go through the years, every single spring and summer, there are major ACL tears. I'll just go through a list real quick, because I wrote about this somewhat recently. Tannehill and Edelman last year. Teddy Bridgewater, we don't know what happened to him. Jordy Nelson, Kelvin Benjamin, Dante Fowler Jr. in 2015. Sean Lee and Sam Bradford in 2014. There are always going to be guys that blow their ACL training for a new season, and Hunter Henry is the most prominent guy this year so far.
It makes you wonder about the value of reporting for voluntary OTAs.
Yeah.
Are you doing more damage to the team by showing up and risking
it? It always seems to be on the first day. Or like Fozzie Whitaker of the Panthers tore his ACL. That was on their first day of
I think Fowler was his first play of his first practice. After
right. Henry was on the first play, and they asked Anthony Lynn about it afterwards, and he said, oh, it's nothing. You know, we're just being careful with them because we can. And then it was a torn ACL.
Mm. Speaking of the Eagles, so they lost Warlow. They also moved on from inside linebacker Michael Kendricks. They announced Tuesday.
Michael.
That's what I thought. But I saw looks.
But we can
and
call
like,
him Mikal.
Did I mispronounce his name? It is spelled with a Y.
Glass-nosed.
Anyway, interesting move. A surprising move, Connie Fox.
Yeah.
Middle linebacker Jordan Hicks coming back from an Achilles tendon issue, surgery, and Warlow just got hurt. He just got to the team, and yet they say goodbye to Kendricks, a guy that could probably help a lot of teams.
Yeah, the linebacker position for me is the biggest question for them right now, especially after this. And Kendricks, I mean, he filled in really well for Jordan Hicks last year when he went down, and that's great for him because we know that he had asked the Eagles to be traded, and we know that he kind of fell out of favor in Jim Schwartz's system. The Eagles kind of look at him as a two-down player, and Kendricks looks at himself as a three-down player, so now he has at least some good tape out there since he got the playing time, so he has a better shot at going to a team like potentially the Steelers, who also have a need at linebacker trying to replace Ryan Shazier. But Kendricks, he's coming off one of his best seasons, and I think I at least realized that they were going to try and shop him around when Nigel Bradham re-signed with them. So that was kind of the telltale sign there. But, you know, now he gets what he wanted. He wanted to be released.
He's a good player. This isn't about his quality of play as much as the value of off-ball linebackers in the NFL.
And the fact that the Eagles had the least amount of cap room of any team in the league. And people think, oh, well, they got past free agency. What do they need it for? I mean, they literally only had $300,000 of cap room. And so if you want to make some long-term signings, which I know that they want to do, or change some contracts, I mean, they had no flexibility. And he was due $7.5 million for a guy who's playing two downs. But he made a big impact, especially in those two NFC playoff games against the Vikings and the Falcons. And
I thought he was their best linebacker last year.
He's a fast guy. Even if he's only on the field two out of three downs, that's 650 snaps. Like, that has a lot of value. Yeah, he wanted to get released. He wanted to get released back in February, early March.
He wanted to get released in 2015.
Right. They're boning him, basically, by
what
letting
him. What does that mean?
I don't know why I use that word
mean?
Right now.
yeah, use bang.
He is not going to max.
The Eagles are boning Michael Kendricks.
They're screwing him over. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I get it now.
It's late. They couldn't get a trade done. Apparently, the Falcons maybe had some interest, Ian Rappaport.
Last year?
He's not going to get the money, you wouldn't think, huge money, but a lot of teams will.
Does anybody get huge money in late May?
No, that's what I mean. He's not going to get it.
At least he got a ring.
You never know.
There's some teams that are intriguing. The Steelers as Ryan Shazier's replacement makes sense. How about the Colts? He can rejoin Frank Reich and give them a linebacker.
He got boned, though. Ooh. I agree.
Thanks.
I think you should stand by it. Screwed.
Boned in a big spot.
He got boned in a big way. all right. And moving on. It is the end of the Christian Hackenberg era.
Christian Hackenberg is real?
Don't you have to have a snap? Don't you have to be active on game day once to have an era?
Yes. One of the most infamous draft picks of this decade and one of the worst in Jets history. Christian Hackenberg, the 51st overall pick in the 2016 draft. In the second round. And even though the Jets were a very bad team in each of the past 2 years, Hackenberg never got on the field. And there's only, I believe, one other instance in the last 30 years or so when that happened, when it wasn't injury-related. And it just wasn't happening. Hackenberg wasn't developing. The team obviously fell out of favor with the team quickly. And even though it's the same coaching staff, that's the other surprising thing about this. It'd be one thing if the first year he didn't progress well, and then everybody got fired, and then a new regime came in, and they're like, oh, we don't like this guy. But it was actually the same coach, the same GM. But even through last year, through 5-11, including after Josh McCown getting hurt in early December, where there was no hope and Bryce Petty was terrible, Hackenberg still didn't see the field. And he was a distant fourth on the depth chart to start OTAs this week. He made some, I guess, negative ish comments about the Jets not helping him enough. And sure enough, about an hour later, he was moved in a trade to the Oakland Raiders for a conditional seventh round pick, which is that's it. That's the lowest you can get without being given away to another team. So Christian,
I want to find out what the conditions are too, because I think that's going to put a pin on your point. I have a feeling it's going to be free.
It's going to be
unless he's like
win the Super Bowl.
Right. It's unless he's starting games over Derek
it's
Carr.
Whether he makes the roster, I believe.
Okay. So there is an answer.
And with John Gruden there, you think he's going to make that roster?
I don't know.
No?
I mean, probably not. And they have, of course, Derek Carr. They have EJ Manuel. They have
Connor Cook
there. So it's going to be very hard for Hackenberg to make the roster. Todd Bowles spoke about Hackenberg and what was an obvious misfire by the Jets. Let's hear what he had to say.
Anytime a pick doesn't work out, I guess you can look at it as a waste. And then when a pick does work out, it's not a waste. Huh? You learn lessons from everything you do in life. It's not just football and draft picks. So if anybody's got a four-leaf clover up their butt and that's going to work out every time, please let me know that person because, hey, it didn't work out here.
Because you want to get the clover.
Why is he developing a personality in like year three?
It takes some time.
Better late than ever.
Let me know that person because I got to get a piece of that clover.
I want his butt clover.
Can you think of a bigger indictment of an NFL quarterback than he never threw a pass on a team that started Bryce Petty in seven different games over 2 years?
Yeah, it was a damning indictment.
Yeah, I mean,
Christian Hackenberg.
The comment that he made was interesting about the Jets, just that he's kind of overhauling his throwing motion now. And basically he was like, yeah, I didn't really, you know what was going wrong with it over the last 2 years. No one told me. Which I'm not going to, like, take Christian Hackenberg's side in this, but it is worth noting, like, you know, McKagan was like, there was all these stories. He was like driving to Penn State through a snowstorm three different times to watch Hackenberg personally at Penn State, and he loved him. And I'm not shocked if they didn't have like the greatest plan to how to develop young quarterbacks. You gotta have a plan.
It's not really smart to be backing the bus up over your coaching staff when you're on the bubble of a roster, though.
I think he saw the writing on the wall.
He was like, get
me out.
He
didn't even get any reps.
Maybe it's not the throwing motion. Maybe he's just not a good player.
Yeah, and if
I mean that's
it got him to Oakland. So actually, it was kind of a good move. Like
Gruden,
he was gonna waste another couple weeks with the Jets.
Yeah,
it got him there. So
Gruden might be literally Hackenberg's biggest fan. What he wrote about him before the 2016 draft when he was working for ESPN, basically saying this guy should be a surefire first-round pick. If you see what he did his freshman year at Penn State, this guy could be the top overall pick. I mean, he thinks that coaching fixes.
Poor Raiders.
And as a Jets fan, there's no way to dress that up. They blew it. It was embarrassing. It was the latest kind of QB. It was the biggest QB debacle for them since the butt fumble. You just hope that this is like the last laugh on them. And now
I want him to have like light it up in the preseason under John Gruden. And then Gruden makes these kind of vague comments where it's like, wait, could he possibly bench Derek Carr for Christian Hackenberg?
Oh,
and that's
God.
A whole story.
And that would be that would actually work out for Big Mac. Because then it'd be like, yeah, see, there was something there. We never gave him a chance, but we have our guy anyway now. And now he's not bad. But that's probably not going to happen.
Nah.
All right, in other news, speaking of quarterbacks, speaking of Eagles, Connie Fox loves the Eagles.
That's right.
Grew up loving those Eagles. It all paid off in a big way. I saw her sobbing on the field.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
That was, you know what? It was sweet, though.
It was real. I don't really like to show
genuine.
That side of me,
no.
Dan.
No.
I was very vulnerable on the field.
You are, I wouldn't call you a closed book, but you do, you know, there's a.
It's a guarded book.
It's a bit of a wall. A
little bit. Got to break through that.
Got to break through the wall.
It's tough to break.
But when I came upon you.
Gonzo broke through that wall.
Oh, yeah, you did.
All right.
Anyway.
I don't know the tone of Dan's voice there.
What? What do you? I was agreeing with you. Anyway, Colleen is an Eagles fan. That's nice. And do you have any comments, Colleen?
No, I just kept going back to boned in a big spot.
I was like, how can I work that in? But I won't. All right. Anyway. Mike Silver is a columnist for NFL Media, and he reported on Tuesday that Nick Foles, of course the Super Bowl MVP, prior to the Browns acquiring Tyrod Taylor for a third-round pick from the Bills, the Browns wanted to trade for Foles, and they were willing to give up a very early second-round pick, a really nice pick, 35th overall, to get Nick Foles and have the Super Bowl MVP on their team. But according to Silver, Nick Foles said, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, he's a god in Philly.
Yeah, but he's not the starting quarterback.
He wouldn't be the starting quarterback in Cleveland either.
Well, this is before the draft. You're probably right.
They were going to take a quarterback at number
one. You're probably right.
And he probably knew that.
And, yeah, that is a good way to look at it. So he chose, I'll stay the backup in Philly and maybe start the season if Carson Wentz has issues over being a bridge guy or maybe not even that in Cleveland. I get that.
It's kind of a great scenario for him because he gets to be hailed as this hero in Philadelphia. He's the backup quarterback, and this is a guy who was thinking about retiring. So I don't know if he really like has big-time aspirations. Now that he won a Super Bowl, I feel like he can just kick his feet up and that's
it. Wow, that's quite a statement. You're saying that he's lost the edge.
Maybe he's just like, I'm going
to
ride this out.
He did get to the top of the mountain.
Hey.
Where is there to go?
Or you're just smart. Like, which team would you rather be on, the Eagles or the Browns? I mean, if he's on the Eagles and he's
rather be happy or sad.
Right. nothing even against the Browns in particular. This would almost be true of any mediocre team.
I'll go against the Browns here in a minute.
Right. Mediocre team. He's in a great situation, and when he plays for the Eagles, he's got to be feeling like he's on top of the world. And that's even if Carson Wentz is hurt or not. Like, if he plays, he's going to be playing in that Doug Peterson offense with those weapons around him.
So the team that tried to pay more for Nick Foles than the 49ers paid for Jimmy Garoppolo also tried to pay more for A.J. McCarron than the 49ers paid for Jimmy Garoppolo. I have no faith in this franchise whatsoever. Mm. And I think what people underestimate about having a franchise quarterback and getting to pay $30 million for a franchise quarterback, it's like a stupidity prevention or like a desperation governor. It keeps you from doing stupid
things. I love that.
I'm the desperation governor. I like that.
It's like the same way Andrew Luck uses a governor for his injuries. Like it prevents you from making stupid decisions, like overpaying tremendously for an average quarterback.
And I think Nick Foles is, ambivalence or, displeasure about this idea can absolutely prevent the deal from happening. So I've seen some people saying, oh, the Eagles are stupid not to do this. Like Nick Foles, probably had a real say in it. If he says, I don't want to go to that team, I'm definitely not that's going to make the Browns not want to go after him. And on a second thought, I don't think the Eagles are stupid for not doing it. I'd rather have Nick Foles. I know that's than that second round pick. I think it's the most valuable thing in the world is to have Carson Wentz and then a Super Bowl MVP at the money that they have him at. It's so cheap. And you've seen how great Nick Foles can be at his very best in that system. That's an amazing luxury. This is a team that can win the Super Bowl right now. Like, I'd rather just keep Nick Foles than the second round.
You don't realize how valuable a backup quarterback is until you need him. What was the joke that we had down in the newsroom about backup quarterbacks? Wasn't there that bit? You had the bit.
My memory only lasts like 6 months. You know that. It's all erased that.
That's actually good.
If we judge by the Patriots' 2017 approach to backup quarterbacks, they are literally invaluable right up until the trade deadline. Then you just give them away.
But that,
like, they're off the table all year. You can't even trade for them if you wanted to give 3 first-round picks. But then at the trade deadline, they're eminently available.
I forgot because it wasn't my joke. It was a Charlie Casserly
joke.
Yes, that's what
I was going to say.
And it was something to the effect of, the most important person in your organization is your starting quarterback. And then the second most important person in your organization is your backup quarterback. And the third most important person in your organization is your third string quarterback. And the seventh most important person in the organization is the guy who gets the balls for the quarterback.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
It's a great Casserly.
See, I was trying to set you up for that. I'm glad it came through because it's one of your
best. You guys got there. You got there.
And speaking of this story, I love a good media slap fight. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Did you hear about this?
Oh, yeah.
Mike Silver, who I wrote.
NFL Networks.
NFL Media.
Oh, wait.
Network.
I don't know about this.
He, of course, penned the piece that we were just talking about Nick Foles. He had the reporting. Mike Florio. Greg, you could choose to pipe in during this conversation or, out of deference for the old boss, you could sit it out. Your call. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Florio comes out and says on his PFT handle, I'm sure that Hugh Jackson leaking that the Browns tried to trade for Nick Foles will go over well with his boss. Ooh. And then what is it? And then Silver replies, he don't like it. He don't like it. Silver replies, hey, Mike, one, don't be a 2, I had three sources. As cited in the story, Hugh was not one of them. Three, attempted source. Yes, always triple source. Three, attempted source outing is stupid. Four, if you have something to say to me, text me. Wow. And then Mike Florio replies, hey, Mike Silver.
This is amazing.
One, you're basically Hugh's agent. Woof. Two, everyone knows it. And then Silver comes back. And Silver comes off the top rope.
Yeah, he does.
I'm basically your daddy. You can kiss the ring the next time you see me, and I'll put you on my knee and teach you about journalism. Night, son. Kissy face.
What?
Stop it right now. We want to stop this tournament. This is stupid. This is absolutely ridiculous.
He started it.
I mean, it's true. Someone did start that.
Wow.
I don't even know if Florio replied to that, but that was, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. I had no idea.
We were
happened.
Due for, like, a good Twitter fight.
They've had some in the past. I don't think any got to this level, but I remember some when I worked at
FT.
They've had some clashes. They both aren't afraid, you know, to mix it up on Twitter.
I will put you on my knee and teach you about journalism.
DJ, move the stick. So I heard it starting a podcast. He actually tweeted at me and wrote, guess we need to step up our beef. We're very much on the undercard at the moment. Which is very fair. Moving on. Uh-oh, it's trope alert time.
Trope alert. Trope alert. Trope alert.
Trope Norv alert. Turner. Trope oh, alert. We all love Norv Turner. Norv Turner. What a guy. The offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. Is invoking the name of two of the most famous pocket quarterbacks that starred under his thumb. It was Troy Aikman and Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers. And the Panthers spent all of last season building up Cam Newton, getting him away from being a zone read running guy, being more of a Ben Roethlisberger type. And guess what Norv's saying? Norv's saying, I see Cam as a guy that can be in the mid to high 60s Oof. In the completion percentage to ESPN's David Newton. And Chris Wessling, this fired Wes out. Sometimes you get under Wes's skin.
There's a big story behind this that involves Carolina Panthers lover David Ealy.
Okay, let me throw it to you, Wes, and you take it from here. First of all, explain why Ealy's involved, and then tell us why this is such a trope.
Ely found this story and asked me if I wanted to write about it. I read through it and I said I literally could not be less interested in this story or what Norv Turner has to say about his delusions of a guy who won an MVP award when he threw less than 60% of his passes, suddenly becoming like a 68% passer. This guy's lower body and upper body do not act in concert when he throws the ball. Mm. So he's never going to be a 67, 68%.
Maybe Norv can help fix that.
Or Norv's delusional. Or this is just another one of those May stories that you just ignore throughout the window. And Ely was so good to me during my cancer battle, so he gets to tell me what to do now. Oh, so I ended up doing the story. I feel bad.
Wow, interesting.
Feel like
this sounds like my wife Emeka telling me that I wear the pants in the relationship. I'm not buying this. David Ealy gets to tell Wes what to do.
Well, for now,
I'm gonna stay away.
It probably will wear off by the end of the summer.
I'm sure it has like some kind of natural time limit on it where I just decide, hey, I did my penance. Ely's not telling me to write it. You know, my 18th Cam Newton story this month.
It's like in The Office when Dwight lied to Michael Scott when he tried to get his job, and then Michael Scott had Dwight do his laundry for 2 years. Like, I wouldn't put you in the Dwight Schrute category here, but you're kind of saying, I'm going to do something for you, but
I want to go read this article now and see the gritted teeth that Wes.
Yeah.
I think Ely's doing it from a place of respect. Like, he really does find it interesting because he's such a big Cam Newton fan. He's such a big Panthers fan. I just don't find it interesting because I recognize a trope when I see it.
Well, you know what's funny?
I just recognize a coach running his mouth when I hear it.
Well, it's funny because I thought you were really zeroing in specifically on the 60% completion percentage or six like high 60s completion
high
percentage
60s.
Trope because that is one actually every year
Eli Manning
there's about three quarterbacks that have a new coach and they're like we're going to be in the high 60s that's where we're
and,
going
and out of all those quarterbacks
what are you even talking about
and out of all those quarterbacks Cam Newton is the least consistently accurate of anyone who was predicted to throw in the high 60s.
We believe that.
I think he could get him some easier throws, though, and that's what.
Yeah.
Well, that's the question.
Is Cam going to take him?
We'll find out. But the question is, like Norv. All right, this might be a trope, but Norv might not be, you know, blowing smoke up our ass. He might believe it. Is what I'm saying. It doesn't mean it's going to work out that way, but that's just the coach's nature. Any coach's
ask
nature.
Ask him in October if he believes it.
I mean, maybe.
Could say anything in May.
Maybe get him to 60 in like a dream scenario. But not high 60.
Yeah, a lot. I think Cam Newton is not inaccurate down the field. I think mid, like, if you take 15 yards and on, he's better than your average quarterback.
The problem
is that's kind of like his main thing, and so that's what they build the whole offense around, and you're not going to have that high a completion percentage.
Didn't we hear last year they're going to do more play action and quick
passes?
That's the exact same. And then game three happens, they're like, our offense is stuck. We need Cam to move the sticks by running the ball again on third down.
More Richie Incognito news. The former Bills offensive lineman who we talked about on Monday's show, he was released by the Bills and intended to try to find another job. We'll see what happens with that because Incognito is being held for an involuntary psychiatric evaluation Wednesday after an altercation at a Florida gym, Boca Raton police said via ESPN. Boca Raton police spokesman Jessica Desir said officers received a call from a patron at Lifetime Gym about a disturbance involving Incognito. He was not arrested, but it was taken into custody under Florida's Baker Act, which allows for involuntary psychiatric commitment for people seen as a danger to themselves or others. Police offered no further details on the incident. 34 years old, Incognito. There was also a TMZ report that said that him and a buddy were drinking beers together. He decided, Incognito, that he needed to talk to someone, get some help, went to the center, and then changed his mind and was starting to cause a ruckus. And then at that point, they invoked, I believe, what's called the Baker Act and made him stay there. So, scary situation involving Richie Incognito.
I think he threw a dumbbell at someone.
That was
one of the things he was accused of doing, yes.
Can't do that.
That's not good.
Talking about the government.
Well, it puts into context. Dan, you asked, I believe, last show. It must have been you since we were the only people on the show.
Just us.
You know, why wouldn't maybe the Bills just kind of let him come back to the – or not allow him to be – not release him from the reserve retire list and kind of make him play for them. And this kind of puts that into context.
Jeff Darlington, when he was working for NFL.com and NFL Network, wrote an article about Incognito, a deep dive. And he's had psychiatric issues for a while. Life is hard. I can understand how your world tips over and you can't hang on. So I hope he gets the help he needs.
Yeah.
In other news, Ben Roethlisberger caught some heat for comments that he made about not wanting to help out Mason Rudolph and being upset with the Steelers for using a third-round pick on a quarterback. Ben, you thought that was kind of an issue, right? Okay, well, you know what the answer is.
So evil.
He just laughed. I don't know what to make of that. Anyway, so he walked back those comments at the start of OTAs this week on Tuesday. Which, as Greg told everyone, this is the phase three of OTAs.
This is the phase three of this story. Like, you could have seen every single phase. You could have said exactly what was going to happen throughout this entire offseason with this story. There is going to be a phase four.
Yeah, I enjoy anything Ben Roethlisberger controversy related.
There's going to be a phase four? I thought it lived. It had a good life, enjoyed middle age, and this was its last dying gasp.
Let's hear what Ben had to say about his comments and his thoughts about his teammate, Mason Rudolph.
I think people took some things that I said into a context that I was going to be mean or rude or whatever, and that was not it at all. If you listen to the whole conversation, that was said in jest and laughing and having fun. So I've never been the type to just be rude or mean to other quarterbacks. So you can ask, you know, Jones, and I've had a lot of quarterbacks through here that have been younger than me that I've tried to help any way that I can. So, you know, I'll continue to do that.
Ben, were you being serious when you told them? Oh, okay.
So it's all just a bunch of fun.
Phase four is like really going out of your way on the media attended practices to do like helpful things that the media sees, and then they're talking. And maybe phase five might be, there's an off, you know, they're going to get together and throw, you know, passes with the receivers, you know, before training camp, you know, off campus and stuff. And he's going to invite Mason Rudolph kind of as a goodwill.
Don't forget about phase six, where during a media availability portion of practice, he'll be seen carrying the helmet and the shoulder pads of Mason in a gesture of solidarity, but also a little wink and an F you to the media.
Right. I like that. I mean, it's chivalrous, too.
We, as the media, have extracted every bit of news out of this story possible. Yeah. The husk is dry.
Phase seven is actually Mason Rudolph just knocks Ben out. Just knocks him
out. Breaks his jaw in two places. Yep. And then becomes the greatest quarterback of all time. So stay tuned.
Write a story.
All right. So many phases.
That's stand corrected.
That's what's happening in the news. All right. So I think especially with the lead news item today we had about the national anthem and the idea of what it is to be an American, freedom of expression. What's freedom of expression done right? What can no one deny? And you could say what you want in this country. Well, you can't scream fire in a crowded movie theater, so you can't do that. And you can't do bomb bits in an airport. That's out now. That's out. And you can't threaten the life of a public servant, whether it be the president or anyone else.
So there are some things you can't do.
But other than that, you could pretty much say whatever you want. And Greg, that's what makes this country great, isn't it?
It is.
All right, good. That's good.
I thought you were looking for the Ben Roethlisberger laugh.
Ben, that's what's great about America, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, you see, he's being passive aggressive today. So what we're going to do is, and you could thank Greg for choosing how much time we had. Greg decided 44 seconds was just enough freedom for each of us today. So
well, I came up with the idea, and I thought 48 seconds. But then I didn't, you know, we have the 48 minutes of the AFC. That's not.
Don't want to box yourself in. You don't want to be predictable.
Go 44.
So this is your idea.
That's right.
Greg. Okay. Just making sure everybody knows.
Right.
Humble explanation. No, although 48 seconds would have been different than 48 minutes.
That's true. That's true.
But we're going to do 44 seconds, which is totally outside the box. And no other podcast is doing this. I want you to show me one other podcast that dedicates 44 seconds to each member of the show to express themselves freely.
In fact, when I heard about this, I thought I missed something and that the 44 had represented something in the news or something that happened. So then I spent about 10 minutes looking around because I didn't want to let you guys know that I didn't know what was going on.
No. No,
big waste of time.
It's the right amount of time.
Was it maybe an Obama ref? He was the 44th president.
He was a great man.
Eric Davis' uniform number.
Eric Davis.
Hank Aaron's uniform number. I believe the National Cameron League hitting Hank. Streak record is 44 games. Pete Rose.
Not as good as 56. The AL streak. And the AL better than the NL, as we talked about
on
Twitter.
The AL is a little Johnny come lately to the party, of course. The NL being there first and establishing themselves.
Is this going to be your
44
seconds?
You'd still be playing cricket. You'd still be playing cricket without the NL.
All right, here we go. Colleen, you're going to get us going.
Whoa.
And what we're going to do, Erica, loose cannon behind the glass.
Yo.
You're going to time this.
Yep.
It's very important to hit this 44 seconds.
Oh, shoot.
Because
that's
what it's all about.
All right.
As soon as it – and you don't have to worry about timing.
Okay.
Or you could.
I got
to know where you are. But you cut the mics. Just cut them.
Wow.
Yep. Gone.
There's no – oh, let me get a couple extra seconds in.
Okay.
All right.
I'm ready. All right. Here.
And you could start.
And we can just say anything we want. Talk about anything.
Other than
the guidelines that you already put out.
Fire in a theater.
Right. Not in a theater.
Bomb stuff at the airport.
Not an airport.
Public servant, like death
not,
threats and things.
Not at
like
the White
violent
House.
Violent
threats. Got it. Okay.
Okay. When the music starts, you start.
Okay.
Go.
Killing Eve right now is probably the best. No, not probably. It's the best show on TV. And if you're not watching it, you're missing out. Sandra Oh and Jodie Comer, they are the two leads and they're awesome. It's about an MI5 agent trying to hunt down an assassin and she's psychotic. It's wonderful. Also, I'll Be Gone in the Dark is my new favorite book. Another sort of thing about a psychopath, sociopath. So what does that say about me? I don't know. Shout out to Supercuts and Janine for fixing John's hair today. It looks really, really good. Also, everybody, follow the broadcast IRL on Instagram and Twitter. And I've been grilling a lot lately. This is my odds and ends because I really did not. I just put some bullet points. I've been grilling a lot lately. Tweet me your recipes if you are really into anything because I'm trying to get outside the box.
Oh, she's cut.
Any box outside the box.
And
damn.
And good job by all three of us because I think it's very important. Yes, you could react with a chuckle or any type of expression like that, but no speaking by anyone else. You give that person their freedom for those 44 seconds.
No, Colleen was creative. I didn't even cross my mind to talk about like a million different things.
Yeah.
Well, you, it's not too late. You're going to be the last in the boomerang.
Okay.
And any thoughts? What was that? I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara. It's about the Golden State Killer. It's
I just watched a 48 Hours about that yesterday, and the book apparently is incredible.
I can't read it while John isn't home. Like, it's that
–
it is that chilling.
She famously – she passed away last April, and then Patton Oswalt, her husband, widow, had these two other dudes finish the book, and I was curious.
It's so well done. It's awesome. She's an amazing writer, was an amazing writer.
Interesting.
Check it out.
All right. All right. Wes, it is your time to shine.
Before I start, I'd also echo Colleen's recommendation to follow the broadcast on all social media.
Thank you, Wes.
Thanks, Wes.
Devices.
Nice. You're grilling too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've been
grilling. Send you some stuff.
Yeah, okay. That's great. Yeah. Awesome.
Good for you.
Okay, this is a passage from a book called Sapiens, A Brief History of
Humankind. Wait, I want to make sure, Wes, let him do that setup, okay? All right, I just want to make sure you get your 44. You don't need to set up. You deserve your own 44.
All right.
It's a book passage, everybody.
The European empires did so many different things on such a large scale that you can find plenty of examples to support whatever you want to say about them. You think that these empires were evil monstrosities that spread death, oppression, and injustice around the world? You could easily fill an encyclopedia with their crimes. You want to argue that they in fact improved the conditions of their subjects with new medicines, better economic conditions, and greater security? You could fill another encyclopedia with their achievements. Due to their close cooperation with science, these empires wielded so much power and changed the world to such an extent that perhaps they cannot be simply labeled as good or evil. They created the world as we know it, including the ideologies we use in order to judge them.
Ooh.
Wow. Sounds like a page-turner.
I just found it relevant today.
The book again was...
Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari.
You want to expound upon that at all?
I just found it relevant for today.
Maybe you shouldn't. I see what you're saying.
I think listeners can draw their own connections.
I gotcha. You like that book?
It's. I was telling Colleen before the show that it's one of the most eye-opening books I've ever read, and definitely the most important book I've read in the past decade or so.
That says a lot because you're a big reader.
That's a
maybe our 4th of July week show should be the Return of the Book Club.
Yes. I'm still working on that. The first one.
That's why you can put in the can, Greggy.
We could. So you're going to be in it, right? You famously you didn't want to be involved in the book club one last time.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I was away. I have a couple books to talk about, actually.
Okay.
I might not be here.
Let's
though,
do it. We do. Yeah, we might have to pre-tape it. Pre-tape it.
All right. Here we go. I have a message for the person who continuously allows their dog to defecate on my front lawn and chooses not to clean up the droppings. I want you to know that I am happy you are doing this. Why? Because I know that I am going to catch you. And when I do, I am going to take my time with you. We are going to get to know each other very well. I won't say we'll become best friends, but you will remember my face in the same way. I will be etched into your mind forever. You want to turn my lawn into your canine's personal toilet? You want to be the neighborhood bad boy? Well, you should know that comes with a price. The cost is everything you own, and everything you love, and everything you are, plus interest. Till we meet. And oh yes.
Whoa. It was so strong. It was so strong, but for the listeners at home, there was one final line.
And I can't say it.
And you didn't get it out.
Yikes.
Can we say it for you?
If you want.
You can said, and we will meet.
But
is there going to be a ball gag involved?
I can't say anything else. Freedom of expression, again, even though this person is probably not a public servant, you can't just
Those people.
As a dog owner, I have bags on me at all times. I am not that person.
Is there anything?
I get a lot of that. I mean, we're in a highly trafficked area, and also I can see out into the front from my window, so sometimes I see them. I make sure.
Treat yourself with respect. Mm-hmm. Get a bag and clean up after your dog. Come on.
Mm-hmm. All right, Greg, close this out.
All right. Well, like Wes doing a little lit shout out. R.I.P. to Philip Roth. Last night passed away. One of the legends. Like, I wish I kind of lived in a time where an author could have as much impact and social currency and matter as much as Philip Roth did. I mean, he, even among American writers, I mean, he might be the guy from the last 50 years, which is a pretty long time. Goodbye, Columbus is amazing. The Ghost Writer. Change My Life, Prague Orgy, really all the Zuckerman-bound books. And then he wrote a great, great book about his father called Patrimony. You know, they never gave him the Nobel Prize. Screw you, Nobel Prize people. Because ultimately, Philip Roth's going to be remembered more as the guy who...
Oh!
What a cliffhanger. You have to wait next year till we do this again.
To find out what Philip Roth's going to be remembered
yep.
for.
I would like to help you the way Colleen helped sure. me, but it actually, I didn't hear it because the music was loud.
It was ironic what I said.
I heard it.
Oh, you want to help out, Greg?
Yeah. Well, I think it was just one word that got yeah. cut off, right?
Yeah.
Snubbed.
There you go.
Like I was by this game.
Yep.
Wow.
You right. set the time. You yeah. set the constraints. If you kept it 48 seconds, you're golden.
Yeah, some people just hit their marks.
Oh!
Whoa!
Shots fired. All right. Good freedom, guys.
Yeah.
Great freedom.
That was great.
You're going to have a little freedom in the backyard this weekend. The old Zeuser's going to have a little BBQ. Loose cannon, you want to come?
Hell yeah.
All right.
Getting on.
It's going to be more than 44 seconds.
Yeah. You know I don't like having people over, you know, that are outside my comfort zone. So I'm only having people over that.
I'm going to bring Blitzen, and she is going to shit all over your yard.
That's fine. Just bring a bag, as we talked about just now, because you know what happens. You know the way I react when people disrespect my yard.
I know.
I got to get my Super Bowl clothing out of storage, get my earmuffs and hat. And
it's yeah. always so cold.
Dan's backyard is the coldest place on earth.
It does have a reputation that I can't control.
It's like a polar vortex somehow. I don't know how.
It's true. All right. So we'll be back on Friday. It is our final show of 3 weeks for a little bit until we'll have about 6-8 weeks where we do two shows a week, and then we'll be back full tilt come training camp. But we're not going anywhere.
Right.
All right. Good. Little serve. Just a little note for the audience.
All great right. show.
Good show. Fun times. All right. Let's go. Stan Hansen is signing off for Connie Fox, the mailman, the old boss, the loose cannon, the whole gang. Till Friday!